The following is a talk that I'm about to give in Borough Park. The topic is money. Does it handle you or do you handle it? A lecture on dollars and cents.
I'm deeply grateful to Mr. Schechter and to Mrs. Rottenberg and to the officers of Zareinu for having invited me to come to speak to all of you. The Chassam Sofer tells us that there was a certain tefillah that was written so that it should be said every Matzah Yom Kippur. Except Klal Yisrael took this tefillah and adapted it so that they say it and sing it every single Matzah Shabbat. It's a famous song. Many of us certainly will recognize the words. Referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we say Matzah Shabbat, HaMavdil Ben Kodesh V'Chol. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who separates between that which is holy and that which is secular, Chataseinu Hu Yimchol. Our Averos, He should forgive. Zareinu V'Kaseinu Yarbe Kachol. Our children and our money should increase like the sand, v'kakolchovim v'aloyla, and like the stars at night. Sand has a certain mila, and stars have a certain mila. Sand has a mila that there's nothing in the world that is as abundant as the particles of sand on the seashore. Stars have a mila that they are bright and that they shine for the whole world. Tonight, we have come for the benefit of Zareinu. We have come to speak about Kaspeinu, to speak about our money. Let us hope that all of us here tonight and all of us in Klal Yisrael will be zeicha, that our children and that our money will increase to such a countless amount like the particles of sand, but perhaps even more important, that our children's accomplishments and the accomplishments that we do with our money should be like Kochavim, should be a shining and a guiding light for all the world. The Torah tells us that when Avraham Avinu sent Eliezer to get a siddach for his own son Yitzchak, Avraham Avinu, the Torah tells us, Vayomer Avraham in Bereshit Chof Dalet Beis. Avram said, El Avdoi, to his servants, the Kanbeisai, HaMoshel B'chol Asher Loi. The one who ruled over everything that he had. The Pasuk of Shad in the Pasuk is that Eliezer was the ruler over everything. He was in control of all Avram Avinu's possessions. But the Klei Yochar tells us a tremendous shot in these words, HaMoshel B'chol Asher Loi, which will be our theme for tonight. The Klei Yochar writes, the Nucha Loimer. We can say, Shemilas Loi, that word Loi, HaMoshel B'chol Asher Loi, is going on Eliezer's possession. Eliezer ruled over his possession. He ruled over his money, not that his money ruled over him. And the Klei Yochar writes, Mi Shehu Loz Achachem Das HaMomon. Anybody who runs after his tremendous taiva of money, his money rules over him, and he has no control. But over here, now we see why Avraham Avinu trusted Eliezer. Because Eliezer was a moishel. He ruled over his money, and therefore he was able to trust him with the shirach. Because the Torah is telling us, Al kein lo yachriku hamomai lasay zavuroi masha'enoi roi v'nochai. He wasn't going to do anything for the sake of the dollar that was wrong. And so we have to remember, not only by Shiduchim, if money is everything that's involved either with a shatzen or with the Shidduch itself, that's ain't a roi v'nochayim, that's not proper. But the Torah is telling us more than that. Somebody who is lord achar momayim, somebody who does not rule over his money, but his money rules over him, then him you have to suspect that he's going to do things for the sake of the dollar that are not erlach and that are not honest. The Gemara tells us, the Medrash in Kehelet, on Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud Gimel, that no person ain't adam yoytzei min ha'olam v'chatzi taivasa v'yadai. When a person leaves from this world, he has not fulfilled half of the desire that he would have wanted for his money. Anybody who has 100 wants to make 200 out of it. Anybody who has 200 wants to make 400 out of it. We always want to make more money, and we want to hold on to it as much and as long as we can. My son went to a clothing store, I'm not going to mention where, before Yom Kippur. So he goes into the fellow and he buys clothes, whatever he needed. And then he says to the fellow, can I pay you by check? So the guy says, yeah, for sure you can pay me by check. So my son says, how should I make it out? So the guy says, my name is Chaim Avram Shaya Horowitz. Make it out to my initials. Chaim Avram Shaya Horowitz. That wasn't his name. You know what it spells. And that's somebody who wants to hold on to the money. He doesn't want to report it. He doesn't want to give it over to anyone. In case you haven't figured it out, it's spelled cash. Before the Vilna Gaon was going to go to Eretz Yisrael, he wrote a letter to his family. And in the beginning of the letter, he writes, please, he writes to his family, don't be so obsessed and don't be so impressed with rich people and riches. He writes, the world is like people who drink salty water. They drink gallons of salty water and they think that they're satiated and they're not going to be thirsty, but it only makes them more thirsty. Because again, he quotes, nobody dies without having fulfilled less than half of what he wants. Everybody is into money. And yet, Shlomo HaMelech warns us in Tehillim. In Perik Yud, Pasuk Yud Ches and Yud Tet. Ba'atal Tayim, if you're going to be lazy, Yimach HaMakara, the ceiling is going to sag. Ubishiflus Yodayim, and if your hands are going to be idle, Yidloi Fabayis, the house is going to leak. You've got to work. You've got to make money. And the next Pasuk tells us, Ba'akesef Yanes HaKoyel. Money is the answer for everything. And Rashi tells us a sad fact of life. The main Kesef ain't Suda. If you don't have money, you're not going to eat. And you're not going to be able to pay the rent. And you're not going to pay the mortgage. And you're not going to be able to marry off your kids. And you're not going to buy food. And you're not going to buy clothes. And how are yeshivas going to be built? Rosh yeshivas have to go out. And everybody knows you have to make money. And it's embarrassing. Chassid and Rosh yeshivas have to go out and ask for money. But you can't build a yeshiva. You can't build a Beis Yaakov. We need money. The Sofner Rebbe once went to raise money for the yeshiva. So he came to a fellow, and the guy gives him $47. So the Rebbe says to him, Entschuldig, what's that for $47? So he says, Rebbe, it's Begamatria, your name, Yoel. So the Rebbe says, in the Heim Flexner, you're sleeping Yoelish, with a chin at the end. You can be sure that guy saved another 300. But our grandparents, and our great-grandparents, many of them came to these shores because America was referred to as the Golden Medina. Many people felt that if they only could make a good salary today, they would have security tomorrow. But never, never, never. For thousands of people, the American dream has become the American nightmare. And we read every day where thousands and thousands of jobs have been lost over the last 10 years. And even though that thousands and thousands of jobs have been created, but many of those jobs require less skill, they afford less pay, and they're less rewarding. And so today we live in difficult financial times. Who ever heard of a bank going bankrupt? Who ever heard of financial institutions going under? But today, it's a very difficult financial situation. And so we live in a society on one hand that's obsessed with the dollar. And yet we live in a society that so many people are overwhelmed by the lack of the dollar. So whether people have an abundance of money or the absence of money, we are many times pained by the dollar. And that's perhaps another shot that the Yalkut HaGeshuni writes, V'hakesef yana, yana from the Lashon of inui. Inui means it afflicts. People, whether you have too much money or too little money, unless you have the right ashkofer, you're going to become afflicted by the dollar. If we have a lot of money, we have to know how to handle it. And if we have too little money, we have to know how to handle the situation. So now let us see what the Torah, let us see what Chazal, let us see what Gedolim in the generation, how they understood the value of money and how they felt should be our approach to money. So let me tell you an interesting story that happened with Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, when he first came to New York, he was a Rosh Hashiva in Torah Vadat. Now Rabbi Yaakov, when he was in Slabodka, he was a Bocher, and then eventually in the Koilo, he was learning one particular Gemara in Gittin, and he couldn't figure it out. Very difficult piece of Gemara. I wish I knew which Gemara it was. But the one who told me the story, by the time he told me the story, he was already older and he didn't remember. It was Rav Simcha's Tait in Elizabeth. He told me the story, Rav Yankov told it to him. So, when Rav Yankov was in Slabodka, he would ask the Bochum in the Beit Medrash. Then he asked the Yungalite in the Koilo. And every place that he went, he tried to find out what the pshat was. And then when he was in Toronto, and he spoke to the Talmid HaChachamim, nobody had a shot for him. Now he came to Torah Vadat, and this was in the 1940s, and he was giving a daily shiur. And he was always worried, what's going to happen when I have to give a shiur to young, impressionable boys, and we're going to get to this daf and gittin? I'm going to have to tell them, I don't know. And they're going to go to the board of directors and say, the rabbi, the Rosh Hashiva, he doesn't know the Gemara. So what's the difference between him and you? We don't know the Gemara and he doesn't know the Gemara. They weren't sophisticated in learning in the 1940s like they are today, that you understand there's a Shver Gemara and you don't understand Pshat. So Rabbi Yaakov was very worried about it. And sure enough, the cycle of Gemara came. Sure enough, it came to Shachta Gittin. And sure enough, he's giving Shiurim. And one night he knows that the next day he's going to have to give that shiur. And he's going to tell the boy that he doesn't know the pshat because Rabbi Yaakov was an ish emes. So what happens? He opens up the Gemara and he's sitting in front of the shir. And as he's saying the Gemara, a pshat falls into his head and he can't believe it. After all these years, the pshat came into his head. And it's the right shot, it makes sense. And he says to the Bochrim, Bochrim, I can't believe it. All these years in Slabodka, Jungalai couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure it out. And now, right now, I figured it out. And of course, he told it to the Bochrim. And then he went to different Talmid Chachamim in Williamsburg, and they were all masking that was the right shot. And Rabbi Yaakov was trying to figure out how did that happen. And in his brilliance, he came up with a tremendous shot how such a thing could have happened to him. And this is what he told us in Chassayt, and this is what Chassayt told me. Rabbi Yaakov says the Gemara tells us in Megillah Avraham Amitzei, famous, famous Gemara. Im Omalach Adam, if a person tells you, you've got the, I worked very hard, V'loi Masasi, and I didn't find it, don't believe him. Because if you work hard, you're going to find it. And if somebody says, I didn't work hard, and I found it, also don't believe him. Nothing comes easy. So if somebody says, I worked hard and I found it, then you believe him. So Rabbi Yaakov says like this. The Gemara tells us further, when is this rule in effect? Hani mili b'divrei Torah. That's only by divrei Torah. But the matan, when it comes to business, siyatahum in Shemaya. Everything is totally in siyatah de Shemaya, that has nothing to do with yagati or matasi. So he says like this, all these years I was learning Torah Lishma in Slabodka, and then later in Toronto. And so therefore, Hashem felt, look, you didn't work hard enough, you don't deserve it. Lo yagati, lo matasi. But now I'm giving a shiur. I'm getting paid to give this shiur. This is business. Business. Yatim and Shemaya. The Abish gave is Yatim and Shemaya. Not that I worked on it. Yatim and Shemaya. It's a different ballgame. Different rules altogether. We see something remarkable here. We see that somebody could work very hard. And we know people who work very hard. And they're not going to be successful in business. And we see people that don't necessarily work so hard. And they're very successful in business. And you know what the answer is? The answer is the Siyata Dishmaya. Every Yid has to understand that Matzah or Matzah in business is Siyata Dishmaya. You have to work, but it has nothing to do with how hard you're going to work. That's the first rule we have to remember. Business is a different ballgame. Everything is totally in the way the Eibishter wants it to happen in Siyata Dishmaya. So I ask you, if we want to have bracha, shouldn't we daven every day
for bracha, Shemin Esrei. The whole Shemin Esrei should be filled that we should ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for bracha. And yet, in the entire Shemin Esrei, the middle part, when we ask Hashem for all the different things, we know Shemin Esrei is divided into three parts. The first part is Sheva, we give praise. The second part is Bakasha, we ask. And the last part is Haida, we say thank you. So in the middle part, by Bakasha, no place do we ask for bracha, except by Parnasa. By that bracha of Parnasa, not only do we ask once, but if you daven in Ashkenaz, you ask four times. And if you daven Nusach Sfar like I do, you ask six times. Over and over and over, you're asking about bracha. Listen. Borech Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu Hashanah Hazoyt. That's Tominei Tzvuat Elotoyva. That's Borech, the first time. The same bracha or the same Talamat Elobracha, whatever season it is. Second. V'sabeinu Mitzuva Uvorech Shunaseinu Kashanah Matoyva. Again, Uvorech. And if you again, like you say, fired it's what Rafa says again. Kikel toiv ato umavorech hachanim. Baruch ato Hashem, mavorech hachanim. Why are we asking so many times, bracha, bracha, bracha? And only in that bracha when it comes to Parnasa. And I'll tell you what I think the reason is. I think the reason is because really Parnasa is a curse. What did Hashem say to Adam HaRishon? Bereishis Gimel Yotet. Bezeyas Apecha. Sorry, Chalechem. With the sweat of your brow, you're going to eat bread. That was a curse. So we ask Hashem, please undo that curse. You gave us a klala, now we want bracha. We're asking for bracha and bracha and bracha to undo that terrible klala. And I'll tell you something very interesting. This has nothing to do with our topic, but I cannot resist telling you that how the Klei Yochar learned this, Pasuk B'Zeyas Apecha Teicha Lechem. It's so remarkable. Your Torah is so rich. You learn one thing and you see something else. This is absolutely remarkable. And it shows me, it taught me another lesson. That even when Hashem is cursing Adam, he's telling him a good thing. Listen to the good thing that the Klei Yochar, you can look it up if you don't believe it, in Gimel Yotet. He writes, here is a lesson to do exercise before you eat. Yeshmach mikan. This is what the doctors are telling us. Shekoidim kol achila, before you go out and eat, you should walk around the block, do some exercises. Sorocha odom lasek ve'ezim alocha. Why? B'zeyas apecha. When you're sweating, then teich alechem, because it's going to help the digestive system. So if you want to know where you know in the trailer that you have to have exercise, b'zeyas apecha teich alechem. Isn't that worth the telling to you? Terrific. You have mamash and mocker to walk up and down Ocean Parkway. But I find such godless that even when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is cursing the Adam HaRishon, he's giving him good advice. B'zeyas apecha teich alechem. When I was preparing this talk, something came into my mind so remarkable that I was positive it was so good that it had to be written in Svarim, and sure enough, I found it in Svarim. Listen to this thing, this is absolutely remarkable. I was looking at the word Milchama. Milchama's war. What are the middle letters of the word Milchama? Lamed, Ches, Mem, Lechem. I think it's a great lesson there. That to get bread, to put bread on the table, to war, to battle. As a matter of fact, once I thought of that, and I thought that I'm something full here, I started telling it to everyone, so I have a brother-in-law in Lakewood of Judah Abraham, and he says to me, what are you talking about? You don't realize there's a whole bunch of words that mean food and mean war and battle? I said, no. And he showed me words, all words that we know. Listen to this. It's remarkable. We all know teref. In Tehillim Kuf Yud Aleph Hei says, teref not family reyo. Teref means sustenance, food. What happened when Yaakov Avinu saw the Ksenas Pasim? He cried out, Toroif Toraf Yosef. Surely he was torn to bits. Teref is sustenance. But teref means to fight and to tear to bits. The word Mezoinus has Zion, Zon. Zon is sustenance. But Zion, clay Zion, is ammunition. Again, fighting. Yesever. What did Yaakov Avinu say? Yei shever b'mitzrayim. There's food in Mitzrayim. We all know shever is from the Lashon of Shvira, breaking. Michya, ala michya. What is michya? Michya sustenance. Michya samolek is wiping out. fighting, wiping out Amalek.
And one more. Vayar Moshe Rabbeinu saw v'hasneh einenu ukol. It's not being consumed. Ukol is like oichel, food. So whether it's lechem and mochama, teref, mezoinis, shever, michya, oichel, we have to battle, we have to fight, we have to snatch. We have to use our brains and our brawns and our talent and our energy. It's not easy making a parnasa. If somebody doesn't make a good parnasa, you can't blame them. It's a battle out there. And the Torah is telling us that. It's a war. It's not easy to make parnasa. But it is a battlefield. And there are winners on every battlefield. So who are the winners in this battlefield of parnasa? And the Gemara tells us something very interesting in Shabbos Lamed Aleph Lamed Aleph. The Gemara tells us, when a person is going to go up to Shemayim after 120 years, what's the first question he's going to be asked? Not how many mitzvahs he did, not how much Torah he learned. The Gemara in Shabbos Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph tells us the first question is, Nosoto v'nasata v'emuna. Were you honest in business? Were you erlach? That's the first thing that you're going to be asked. They're not going to ask you, how many commissions did you make on all those insurance policies? Yeah. They're not going to ask a woman, how many shekels did you sell? Or how many walls did you decorate? Or they're not going to ask somebody, how many properties did you manage? Or how many businesses were you and a partner in? They're not going to ask these questions. You know what they're going to ask? They're going to bring up a teacher. And they're going to say to the teacher, did you really prepare those lessons properly? Or did you come up to the class and think you just ad-libbed it? Or they're going to ask somebody who was in business, did you fabricate lies about your competition? Were you erlich in business? Did you pay your bills on time? Did you inflate your deductible on the insurance so that you shouldn't have to pay any money? Were you honest in business? That's the first thing they're going to ask. Let me tell you a story about it. It happened with a lady. I just heard recently she works in a real estate office. So the real estate office, the guy tells her, listen, you've got to go out and show this property. And he says to the lady, room lady, he says, and don't forget, you got to tell them that it's worth $10,000 more than it really is worth. Because, you know, we want to sell this property. So she says, I can't do that. That's not honest. He says, yeah, but we're trying to sell this property. She says, yeah, we're trying to sell this property. The property's for sale, but my religion is not for sale. That's an answer. That's Elohite. A young man once came to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Dichter told me this story. A young man once came to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and he said, Rebbe, I have to quit my job. He says, what's your job? He says, I'm a shochet. He says, you're a shochet and a boydet. Such a heavy job and quiet. So why do you want to quit? He says, that's exactly the reason. I feel such an achrayus. What if my chalas is not perfect? What if when I have to check the lungs and the sirchas and I don't do a perfect job, I'm going to be Michael, Klal Yisrael with treifas? I can't have that on my conscience. And then there's a butcher who wants I to tell him that the animal is kosher, even though it's not. I can't have that on my conscience. So he said, so what do you want to do? And I said, I'll be a plain businessman. I just want to go into business, simple businessman. So it's also on to say something like this. He said, tell me, did you learn for smicha? Yeah. How many years did you learn smicha? 2 years. Did you have a faher? Yeah, you had a faher. And you chazed over the halachas many times? Yeah. So you chazed over the halachas. And you went, and you went over all the halachas, and you studied. And because of one aveira that you don't want to be Michael Tracer, look what a businessman, if you go into business, what do you have to worry about? Loi signoi, you didn't steal. Loi sigdol, loi sachmoi, loi sashoi, that you didn't cheat. Loi soinu, you didn't agree to anybody, say something wrong about a property that you were going to buy or that you sold. Loi sechachas, you're not to deny. There's so many aveiras. Did you chazit? Did you learn chayshim mishpat? What do you think, just because you go into business, there's 10 times more aveiras in business than there is in shechita? So Rav Gifter told me that he once told over this story, and a year later, two of his Talmidim called him. And you know what they said? They said, Rebbe, last year we heard this year from you. And we were so taken by this year that we decided to make a Seder on Choshen Mishpat. And every day we can tell you that now we see every day in our business things that we did that were wrong in the years before. There are a lot of halachas. That's what we're going to be asked. Will you erlach? Listen to this story. I don't think I ever told this story over in public. Certainly not here. What happened with Rav Elyu Dushnitzer? The Chazon said he was from the Lamed Vov Tzadikim. He was a mashgiach in the Lamed Yeshiva.
Rav Sholem Shadron, the Maggid of Yerushalayim, should have a poor flame. When he was a little boy, he learned in this yeshiva. And everybody knew that Rav Elie Zusiter had an orange pardes, a pardes of oranges. And he was getting older, and he had a lot of debt. It really wasn't his in the beginning. He had taken it over from his son. His son got it as Nadan. And he owed tremendous amounts of money. So he said, how can I die and owe so much money? I've got to sell this pardes. So everybody who he saw, he said, please daven for me. Tell the little children in the yeshiva they should daven that I should be able to sell this pardes. So it happened a year later. One of his talmidim went into business, and this guy was selling different properties or whatever. And a fellow from America comes, and he says to this guy, he says, look, I'd like to buy a pardes. He says, oh, pardes, my Rebbe is trying to sell a pardes. That's terrific. So let me hook you up with my Rebbe. They call the Rebbe Zusha, they come to Yerushalayim, and they all get on the bus, and they're traveling to a place called Ir Shalom, right outside of Tel Aviv. And this American businessman is sitting next to the Mashgiach, Rebbe Zusha, that Helig Yid. I saw a picture of him, Mama said, tzaddik. So Rebbe Zusha says to this man from Eretz Yisrael, he says, you know, I want to tell you a Gemara. The Gemara above Messiah says, Chofetam and Bey, if a father left a lot of money to a son, and the son wants to be sure that it's going to get lost, he should just hire workers and not look after them. Then you know for sure that the workers aren't going to do a good job, and you'll lose your money in no time. He says, excuse me, you want to buy this project, but are you going to be in the Eretz Yisrael, or are you going back to America? He says, I'm going back to America. He says, you're going back to America, I can't tell you the project. It's ridiculous. These workers, they won't take care of it. You're going to lose all your money. I can't sell it to you. He says, no, Rebbe, don't worry. I want to buy it anyway. They're traveling on the bus. And Rebbe says to him, you know, I want to tell you something. In the northwest corner of the pardes, that there are a few orange trees that the sun doesn't get there, and they don't grow oranges. So I just want you to know that. And the Talmud is calling, because now he sees why the pardes is not being sold. So he says, no, don't worry. I'll buy it anyway. And as they're getting close, he says, you know, I forgot to tell you about the southwest corner. On the southwest corner, there's a lot of rocks there, and a lot of stones. So it's very heavy, and the ground, it always sinks in, and it doesn't grow. So you got a problem in the northwest and in the southwest. He says, no, Rebbe, don't worry. I want to buy it anyway. Fine, they come outside, and he's walking around the pardes. All of a sudden, the man looks at his watch, and he says, okay. And he takes out a pill from a little bottle, and he swallows one down. So the Rebbe says to him, what is this? He says, ah, I have a little heart condition. I have to take a pill. A heart condition? A heart condition? You're going to buy this pardes? Chassid shalom, there's no way I'm selling it to you. There is the hubble of Hamar Fush Lema. And he wouldn't sell it to him. So Rav Shon Shadon always says, why did Hashem make it that this person should have to come all the way to the pardes and look at it and then not end up with it? So he said, it's possible. David should want it. He should get a bracha from Alam Vav Tzadik. But Lamaise, at the end, it happened that he had another Talmud who had a yeshiva and Meyasharim. And he told the Bachrim to say, kill him, and eventually he was able to sell it. But how does that happen? Why does that happen? Because this Rabbi Elie Zusiter was somebody who, when he came to Shemayim, he's able to answer the question that he was Erlach. There's another way to be victorious when it comes to money matters. The Gemara tells us in Nida that Ayin Amadeh, Mayasa Odom Yisasha, what should a person do and he'll become wealthy? So the Gemara says he should be involved in business. Elachite. So the Gemara says a lot of people did that and it didn't help. So the Gemara says, Eliyavaki Shirachamim Mimisha Oisha Shalot. You have to daven to the one who the wealth is his. And the Gemara at the end says, Maika Masmalon, you gotta have both. You have to work and you have to daven. And the Gemara Kedushim Teves Amr Aleph tells us something very interesting. Rab Meir says that every father should teach his son an easy job. An easy and a clean job for his father, Lamisha Oishav, and Achosin Shalai, and he should daven. And listen to this. She'ein ha'um de'she'ein b'yamiyus v'ashirin. Every single job has wealthy people and poor people. There are many people that are selling tables and making a fortune. There are people that are selling furniture and making a fortune. There are people that are selling dinettes and not making any money whatsoever. There are people that draw, that are artists, to make a fortune. And there are many people that are artists, they can't even put bread on the table. There are many people that are selling peanuts and popcorn, and they're making a fortune. And there are many people that are selling peanuts and popcorn, and that's what they're making, peanuts and popcorn. They're making nothing. Because the Gemara tells us, Shaloi ani yismin ha'omnis. The poverty doesn't come from the job. The loyat sirus min ha'omnis. El ha'kola pizkutai.
Everything is according to your schutzim. Everything is b'tziyata d'shmaya. And that's what we have to remember. That it really, really is not up to the job. Don't think, if I only was in computers, I would have made a fortune. You would have made the same fortune you're making today. It all depends on your schutzim. The Gemara tells us in Yuma that the Talmidim asked, why did Hashem have to give mon every single day? Hashem could have given mon once and it would have been good for the whole time that they were there. Hashem was making nisim. So the Gemara gives us an answer. You know why? It's like the king who gave his son enough money for the whole year. How many times did the son come to visit him? Once a year when he got the money. The reason the Eibishter doesn't give us a lot of money, you know why? Because Hashem wants we should talk to him. Hashem wants that we should daven to him. As a matter of fact, that's what the Shishka Rebbe says, a tremendous pshat. It says that the Nochash got cursed. Ofar toichal kol yemei chayecha. You're going to eat earth all your life. That's a curse. Wherever he goes, he's got food. He goes to South Africa, he goes to England, he goes to America, if you sell, he's got earth wherever he goes. That's a curse. You know what the curse is? David said, gave him his food. I don't want you to bother me. Don't talk to me. Wherever you go, you got your own food. I don't want to have anything to do with you. And the Me'iri in the Zoram tells us something. Every person should remember this. Me'iri in the Zoram, that men test on his base. Even though that on Rosh Hashanah, a person is nidan, a person is judged, whether he's going to have happiness and sadness, whether he's going to be wealthy or poor, whether he's going to have pain or pleasure. He says, "Ach zardino shel adam nikra b'tshuva o b'roish tefillah." Every zardin that happens on Rosh Hashanah can be broken. It can be changed through tefillah and tshuva. So that's why Hashem doesn't give us always the parnasa that we want, because Hashem wants to hear our tefillah. You know, the Baal Shem Tov told a beautiful story. There was a water carrier. There was a water carrier, an old man, 70 years old. He's schlepping water up on a hill. And somebody comes over to him. He says, "Rabbit, how you doing?" He says, "What do you mean how I'm doing? Look, 70 years old. I have no savings. I got to schlep this water up the hill. It's so hard. I would have thought by my age I could have retired already." The next day, somebody meets this water carrier. He says, "Nu, Rabbit, how you doing?" He says, "Wow, look at me, Baruch Hashem. I don't have to come on to anybody. I can schlep my own water. I can carry it up the hill. I don't have to worry that my kids are going to have to support me. I can take care of myself. That's wonderful." So what's going on here? So the Baal Shem Tov says a terrific shot in the Gemara. He says, you know what the answer is? That's the Gemara that says, Zayin Amal Aleph and Rosh Hashanah. One Gemara says that we're judged on Rosh Hashanah. Another Gemara says that we're judged every day. Every day we judge what mood we're going to accept that which we have. Rosh Hashanah, Hashem decides how much we're going to have. But every day you know, some days you're satisfied with what you have. And other days you think, Mama, it's terrible. I know myself. I'm a moral. Some days I think, what a great job. Bagels and lox every morning if you go to Frum Bris. People are always happy. It's always a great occasion, right? But some days I think I have the best job in the world. And then what happens when it's the girl season? And I can't, right? What am I supposed to do? I can't force people to have boys, right? And how in the world am I going to plan a vacation? I can never, ever plan a vacation. I plan a vacation, a whole bunch of boys are born, I'm in South Africa speaking or doing whatever it is, and then I'll just forget about the Bris, and then the whole family, they go to somebody else. It's a very difficult job to have. So every day you're judged on the mood that you're going to accept that which you have. And Rosh Hashanah, you judge on what the whole thing is. So let me give you 7 bits of practical advice how we can increase our finances. 1, every single day without fail in Baruch Aleinu, you should have kavana in Shemoneh Esrei Baruch Aleinu to daven for parnasa, and as we said many, many times, daven for others and you'll be answered first. The Gemara says in Bava Kamis that it's based on Amin Aleph, Kol HaMavakesh Rachem Al Chaveiru V'Tzarech Lo Yisadova Hunena Tchila. Anybody who davens for somebody else, we all know people with financial problems. Many people looking to marry off kids, looking to get another job, looking to get accepted, whatever, by a boss. We know people with financial problems. Davens for somebody else, and you'll be answered first. In the same bracha, no Shemoneh Esrei should go by in the week without you davening for another year or for yourself in parnasa. That's 1. 2nd thing, in the new Siddurim, certainly in the Oscar Siddurim, but in the newest Siddurim, in Shema Karlena, if you look on the bottom, there are 2 beautiful tefillahs. One of them has to do with parnasa. Every single Shemoneh Esrei you daven, you should say that tefillah for parnasa. Number 3, this is in Sefer HaChinuch, Mitzvah Tov Lamed. He says, Kach Mekubal, this is Mekubal, Ani Mirabois, Ayishmarim Kael.
for my heilige rabbonim, I was makabel. Shekol hazay bebrichas hamozayin mizaynayt of mitzvim like a kovet kol yomo. If you daven like a mensch, you're going to have panos of a kovet all your life. We should never daven from now on, say benching bal peh. Always in a sitter. Daven benching slowly. Don't put away the dishes when you're benching. Don't make sure that the kids of faith are not running around doing benching. Sit in one place and bench like a mensch. And here, the chinuch tells us, in mitzvah tov lamed, you're going to have mezainis b'chovay. Number four, every time we say ashrei, we should have kavana poiseyach es yodecha umazdi alachol chayrotayim. That's the bracha, that's the posik for panosa. Number five, again, in the new sedurim, also, only in the newest sedurim, you'll see after Aleinu, there are additional tefillos. One of them is a beautiful, touching tefillah for Parnassah. Every single day of the weekday, you should make sure to say that to people. Some say it's the Parshas Hamon, and others, there's another tefillah there. You should say that for Parnassah. Number six. Every single time that you make a bracha, Rabbeinu Bechaya tells us, you know what the word baruch means? Baruch doesn't only mean blessed. Baruch is brecha. It's a wellspring. And so therefore, when you daven, when you say a bracha, you're not only thanking Hashem, you're praying, Baruch ato Hashem. Hashem gives to everybody. And that's why he says, that's what the Gemara says, if you don't make a bracha, then you're stealing not only from Hashem, you're stealing from Klal Yisrael. You know why? When you make a bracha quickly, and you don't think when you're saying you're stealing from me or I'm stealing from you? Because you had an opportunity to daven for all of us. You could have said, Baruch ato Hashem. Hashem give from this wellspring of bracha. And the final thing, seven, and there are many, many other schools in davening, but I'm just telling you these seven. Very, very interesting Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Bava Basra Chofeg, if you want to get smart, when you daven Shemin Esra, keep your feet a little bit to the right side. You want to get rich, Yashvin. Keep your feet a little bit to the left side, to the north side. Why? Because in the Beit HaMikdash, the Menorah, which represents Torah, was on the right side. So if you want to be smart, daven a little bit to the right side. And if you want to be rich, that's the Shulchan that represents the Zaynus. So you move your feet a little bit over to the left side. You don't have, we'll see tomorrow how you daven. So let's go over. Everybody will look at everybody else's feet tomorrow. So let's go over these seven things. Borech Aleinu, that's the first. Shema Aleinu, the Tzvila Panos at the end of Shema Aleinu. Birchas Amozen, very important. Birchas Amozen, the fourth Pesach Es Yodecha, the fifth, the Tzvila Panos, Parshas Amon after Aleinu. All brachas should be made with tremendous kavana and flow. And again, if you want to be a little bit more rich, daven a little bit over to the left side. Rav Palm once said in Aguda Convention, every day we say in Shema, what does that mean? With your whole heart and with your whole soul, you have to love Hashem. He says, that's not today our Nisayan anymore. Baruch Hashem, most Yidden in the world don't live anymore where people are going to take your nefesh, people are going to take your lay. There was shreklecha golosin, shreklecha persecution, shreklecha times in Klal Yisrael when people had to say b'cholavavcha, b'cholnafshecha and prove how they loved Hashem. Today in America, we don't have that problem. What problem does Rav Palm say we have? The chol mi'aydecha, all our money. Do we love Hashem with all our money? Let me tell you a beautiful, beautiful story that Rav Shalom Shadron once told over. Told over that it was once Yom Kippur, and Rav Levi Yitzchok Baditcheva was standing by his omid on the side, and he didn't allow the chazan to begin kol nidrei. And everybody is wondering, why is Rav Levi Yitzchok not allowing them to begin? And finally he calls over the shamus, he says, tell me, is Mutl, the simple year, is Mutl here in the back? So they call Mutl, and Rav Levi Yitzchok says to him, Mutl, I'm coming out to ask you something. He says, don't you work for a very rich poet? He says, yeah, a very rich landowner. He says, didn't he buy a dog? I remember something about that he bought a dog this past year. He says, yeah, he bought a dog. He said, how much did he pay for that dog? He said he paid 400 rubles. 400 rubles for that dog. Oh, Baruch Hashem. Ah, wonderful. That was the news I was waiting for.
tells the Chazan, he could say Kol Nidre. What in the world is going on? What does a dog got to do with Kol Nidre? 400 rubles for a dog. And of course, after Meiriv, everybody comes over to the Rebbe and listens to what the Rebbe says. The Rebbe says, I want you to know this past year in our town we had a Malamed. The Malamed didn't live here. He lived far away. And he was away from his family a whole year because he had the Nebuchadnezzar Parnassa. And he taka made 400 rubles. And I know because Yichabim Bagleitin, I told him goodbye and he went to his own house far away. And then I found out that on his way home, he was in a hotel, in a motel overnight, and he put down his money when he went to sleep and somebody robbed him and all the 400 rubles was gone. And he cried and he yelled and he screamed in the morning. But nobody saw robbers. Nobody saw anything. And this Erlich HaMelamed, people had such achmanis on him. And there was a Goyish Aparit that was in the motel as well. And he comes over to this dear Melamed and he says to him, tell me, my friend, what happened? And he says, I worked a whole year. A whole year I worked. And now all the money is gone. How am I going to go back to my wife and family? I wasted a year. And this Aparit says, don't worry, you look like an Erlich person. And he takes out 400 rubles and he gives it to this Melamed. And a lady Yitzchak says, when I heard that, I couldn't get over it. What is that going to be? A terrible thing for Klal Yisrael. Which Yid in our town did such a great chesed like that Goy did? That Goy went and he saved a family. He gave him 400 rubles. How can we go to Yom Kippur and ask Hashem for Mechila when a Goy did something better than all of us did? But when I found out that Goy spent $400 for a dog, then $400 doesn't mean anything to him. That's no big deal. If he could give out $400 for a dog, he's not going to give it to a Malamed. It's nothing to him. And Rav Shaul Shadron says, you know what that teaches us? That we have to have the same standard. Many of us complain, Pesach is so expensive. I don't mean me. I mean the Yontif. The Yontif, right? He's still back. Many people complain matzah and the dishes and the clothes, it's so expensive, right? And all the umtoyven and tuition. But what happens when you have to have a stereo? Or when you want to buy an expensive camera? Or when you want to buy a three-piece outfit? Thank you. So then all of a sudden things are not expensive. So we have two sets of standards. For the building campaign of the yeshiva, we have no money. But for the building campaign of our own home, we have plenty of money. What happens if at the end of the month, a Rebbe just told me tonight, I was told him over this story, he said, I want you to know, I'm embarrassed to tell you this. He says, but when I make a cheshbon at the end of the month and I see that I'm short, you know what bills I don't pay? I don't pay the Pesachos bill. Because they're not going to charge me interest. They're not going to throw out my kids. I'll get it 2 weeks later. But my credit card, that I pay. So what kind of standards do we have? When it comes to Divrei Chol, then we're willing to spend all the money that we have to. When it comes to mitzvahs, when it comes to Heilige Sachen, then all of a sudden we're not careful. I think from tonight on, every single person, whether here or listening to the tape, from now on they should have a special Meister book. That means they should keep an exact cheshbon of every penny that they earn and figure out if they're mechuyev to give Meister. Because what happens at the end of the month, or at the end of the year, you think, oh, for sure, I gave him out the money that I'm supposed to give. You make a chesed, you'll see you really didn't give that much. You think you gave a lot. Of course, you ask a rov if you're mechuyev to give, how much you have to give. That you have to have a rov to paskin how much you're mechuyev to give. But once you know how much you are mechuyev to give, you have to have a book to the exact penny. In business, you have an exact penny, what your inventory is. But for Meister, we should have the exact same thing. The Gemara tells us, Shaul Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara Megillah Kof Ches Amud Aleph. Rabbi Akiva asked of Nechunya HaGadol, "V'maharach Yamim, you lived such a long life. How was it that you lived such a long life?" And you know what he said? "Vatran from Amoini. I was easy. I was generous with money." And you know what the Sefer Chassidim writes? A remarkable thing. Simen Shin Kof Gimel. Yosef Toiv, it's better to be a friend of an Amoret who is easy with his money than to be a friend of a Talmud Chacham who's stingy. Keep away from penny-pinching people. Keep away from stingy people. Because they're nasty, and that's how we have to be careful not to be that way. We have to be easy with our money. Give a bigger tip. Give a nicer gift.
I'll tell you a story. I think this is Vatrona. Some people say that this family had no choice. Let me tell you. Maybe you can judge. I think this was very, very nice of the girl's family here. A girl's family. I happen to know the family. The girl was going out. She lives in Brooklyn here. And she's going out with a boy from out of town. So this boy out of town, he didn't have a car. He doesn't have a car here. So the girl's family said, well, you can borrow our car for the evening. Fine. They went out once, twice, three times. Fine. After four times, it was all over. Fine. Okay, good. Next. Fine. But after the fourth time, a week later, the parents of the girl, they got a letter in the mail. If you drive on Ocean Parkway and you go through the light at church, they're going to take a picture of your car. And if you go through the red light, it's going to cost you $50 because they got a picture of your license. So be careful at Ocean Parkway and church. So this guy was driving with this girl, they're driving on, and he got a ticket. But now it's over, right? They finished 4 days, and it's finished, right? So now who's supposed to pay for the ticket? He's the one who got the ticket. But the girl's family, that's on them, very nice people, they're not going to call them, forget about it, so they pay the $50. I think it's very erlich on their part. Other people say, what are you going to do? You're going to call the boy and ask him to pay the ticket? It's kind of embarrassing. But I still think it's very nice on the girl's side. But the Sefer Hasidim tells us another thing. You can be a Vatron, but don't, he says in Simon Tosnun Dalas, Mishachayev Lacherim, if you owe money to other people, Lo Yarba Vitzchakai, don't go giving a lot of tzedakah. Don't go being a Vatron when you owe money. If you owe money, then the money you have is not yours. There are many, many people in Nebuch that are in debt. And they think, well, we're in so much debt, we're just going to keep on borrowing. First of all, that's the worst thing that you can do, is to keep on borrowing and borrowing without end. It gets you into such a terrible rut. But if you do owe money, then you have to live on a lower standard, because the money that you have is not yours. Paying back debt has to be a priority. There are many of us who owe money and we just forget about it. And not only is it Geneva, but what it makes that those people who have lent us money, we are now going to say, Atanoisin Yad Lapoishin, you extend your hand to those that have done Averis. The Amin Chapshuta Lakabel Shavin, Hashem, you're going to extend your hand to get back those people that have done Averis. V'tlamdeinu Hashem Elokeinu, L'hizvadis L'fanech Al-Kol HaVeinasenu, you're teaching us how to say Vidui. L'manech Da'al Mo'oishek Yodeinu, so that we can withdraw our hands from robbery. He said, which yid here in Shul robbed? He said, but if you didn't pay back a loan, then you've robbed. So from tonight on, anyone that has a choy, call the person that you owe the money. Tell them that you're sorry you didn't pay on time, and even if you're going to pay $5 a week or $5 a month, but tell them that you're going to pay. And make it your business to pay back the loan. Otherwise, chas v'shalom, you're robbing every day by using money that's not really yours. The Gemara tells us that Abchir once said to his wife, the Gemara Shabbos Kufnun Aleph from the day, said when a poor man comes to the door, don't forget to give him money. Because someday our children are going to come and they're going to knock on somebody's door and they're going to want to have money. So she said, you're cursing me? Why are you saying that? He says, you know why? I'm not telling it to you. The Gemara is telling us it's a pasuk. The pasuk is in Dvarim. It says you should give the poor man. Dvarim says, Vav Yud Ki Beglal HaDavar Azeh Yivarechecha Hashem Elokecha. Because of this, because you have money, that's why you should give. And Beglal is a circle. Goylel. Gal is a circle. And he said, nobody holds on to it forever. And you know, this is a medrash that I've said many times. And I feel every parent should learn it with their children, and every teacher should learn it in school. Medrash Rabbah Bereshit Chav Beis Chet. Why are possessions called nechasim? You know why? Shenichzim mizeh v'niglim mizeh. Because they go from other and they hide. They're hidden. They vanish from one and they go to another. Nechasim is nichzim. It gets hidden. Nobody holds on to it forever. Why in the Gemara is a dollar called zuz? Shezozim mizeh v'noisim mizeh. It moves from one person to the other. Mamon, why is it called money? Mata moina, what are you counting? You think you're going to hold on to it forever? Moi. You know what the word moi stands for? Ma le'ei. What are you making such a big deal? You're only going to hold on to it for a temporary amount of time. We have to remember we're not going to hold on to it forever. And the Aruch HaShulchan tells us there's only one way that you're going to hold on to it. You know how? He writes in Simon Reish from Zion Hay that he has a Kabbalah. If you collect money for others,
then Hashem is going to give you this chus that your children will never have to be collected for. Go out and raise money for other organizations, whether it's for Zareinu, whether it's for others. You collect for others, because Aruch HaShulchan tells us in Reish Mem Tes Yud Beis, there's no more difficult or embarrassing job than raising money for other people. But if you go out and do that, you're going to be spared, and then you won't have to collect from anybody else. The Gemara tells us in Ksuvah Samach Vav Amud Beis, you want to preserve your money, melach momayin, you want to salt away your money, chaser, give it to tzedakah. And you know what kind of tzedakah? The Gemara tells us that you're allowed to test Hashem. That's the only way that you can test Hashem. You give money, asher, bishvil shetes asher, the Gemara tells us. That's the only way that you can test. And listen to this frightening, frightening Sefer Chassidim, and many of us here in this room are in this position. Oshir Echad, a wealthy man used to give money to Aniyim for tzedakah. Vayenoisim b'yad ha-gabay, and he used to give money to the gabay, the Sefer Chassidim and Simen Shin Chof Dalet. Omalei HaChacham. So my Rebbe Rav David Cohen said that Omalei HaChacham means over here, Rav Yudah Chosid himself says to the man, Kol ma'ata noisel aniyim, everything that you're giving to the aniyim, or it says, V'hayaloi och oni, this person had a brother that was poor, and he had relatives that were poor. So the Chacham, Rav Yudah Chosid, said to him, all the money that you're giving is nechsav l'tza'oka. It's a gishrei, not tzedakah. How many of us here have relatives that are starving? Brothers and sisters that don't have what to eat, out of a job. Do we give them money? Or do we think, no, we're going to support the whole world, we're going to give an Eretz Yisrael, we're going to give to all the different races where we get covered and we get honor and glory? That's a ta'aka, not a tzaka. That's a gehimel gesherek. If you have any relatives that are financially in debt, that are financially down, you have an achrayus to give to them first. Otherwise, Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid said it's not a tzedakah, it's a tzedakah to Gishrei. And a story happened right here in Borough Park with the Kapitan Serebi. The Kapitan Serebi once went to an office on 47th Street in the Diamond Center. And he came into the office, and the secretary rang the fellow, and she said, I can't believe it. I think your rabbi is here. And he came running out, and he says, Rebbe, what are you doing here? I just saw you in the morning in shul. I feel terrible. Why did you have to come? You could have called. I would have come to you. He said, no. I need you now, so I decided that I would come to you. He said, Rebbe, what can I do for you? Please, sit down. And the Rebbe says, I'll tell you, I'm collecting for a family. Nebuch, very tzebrochen, no money, medical bills, and tuition bills, and food bills. Oy, Rebbe, he says, that's all you need. You could have called me. I'd give you my checkbook, Rebbe, whatever you want. He says, absolutely not. You have to decide what you want to give. But Rebbe, you could have called me and I would have sent it to you. I would have brought it to you. No. The right thing is that I need you, so I have to come to you. So he says, Rebbe, tell me, how can I make out a check? He says, yeah, of course. He says, how should I make out a check? So the Rebbe says, make it out to your brother. Could you imagine what a lesson that was? The Rebbe went back from Borough Park, and it wasn't easy to out the commission to Rebbe. Rebbe Avraham Yeshua Heschel. Chusa Yogin Aleinu. He went Dafka to 47th Street to bring home the point to this fellow. And that's a lesson that all of us have to remember. Every one of us here has family members that are down and out. And they have to be our priority. I want to tell you a story that happened to me just a few months ago. One of the most remarkable things to me that ever happened. And it taught me about sensitivity. I had to speak in a community, which I don't want to mention where it is. All of you know the community, very, very wealthy community at one time. Houses, tremendous houses with a lot of land and acreage and all that. And Nebuch, I don't have to tell you, with downsizing, many people lost a lot of money, and many people can't afford what they were able to afford before. So they asked me I should come and I should speak about the ups and downs in life. So I came, and I had a story in my mind, I had it in my notes. It's a story that many of you know. The story that happened with Chomi Bodek, all of you know Chomi Bodek, a tremendous person. She has a son who, when he was a year old, was never stricken with spinal cancer, Yoel Yitzchak, and nobody ever thought that he would live. And Baruch Hashem, he survived those terrible, terrible operations. But he had to have physical therapy. So one day, Mrs. Bodek, she took him to the Rusk Rehabilitation Unit on 34th and 1st, and it was freezing. And she came outside and she had him in the wheelchair and she had to take him on a bus. And some of the buses in New York are outfitted with a lift. So
It's freezing, and two or three buses go by, they don't have the lift. So now, Yoel Yitzchak, he's a little baby at that time, and he's crying. He's freezing. So his mother decides she's going to put him on the next bus no matter what. She's going to schlep up that wheelchair. And what happens? The next bus comes, it doesn't have a lift. So she has no choice. Anyway, she schleps up the wheelchair, she's about to go on, and the bus driver yells at her. He says, what are you talking about? You can't be on this bus, it doesn't have a lift. You're going to have to wait for the next one. So two people jump up, two passengers. And I say, well, are you crazy? You're going to make her wait? You'll wait, you'll wait. That little boy is freezing, look at him. So of course the bus driver is intimidated, and he has no choice. So Chumi picks up the wheelchair, and somebody helps her, and she's walking down the center aisle, and a lady stands up and she says, lady, there's nothing wrong with your son. It's a bus driver, he's got a handicapped mind. How do you like that insult? A bus driver's got the handicapped mind. So what I was going to do is I was going to tell the people over there that that's what I believe is the pshat, what the Lady Yitzchak says, that's the real pshat of Yahatul Reach HaKamayicha. What is the pshat of Yahatul Reach? How can anybody love anybody the way they love themselves? And the answer is, you look in the mirror tonight, you know you're not perfect. None of us are perfect. But yet we love ourselves, right? Even though we're not perfect. Yahatul Reach HaKamayicha. Love your friend like you love yourself. You're not perfect and you love yourself? Love your friend even though they're not perfect. And that's what I was going to say in that community. Love everybody in the community. Don't look down if somebody doesn't have any money anymore. Don't look down if they can't pay the tuition. Don't look down if they have to move to a different house that's less amount. And I come into an auditorium just like this, and I walk in through the back, and I'm walking down the aisle. Before I'm going to speak, I'm holding my notes in my hand. And there's a girl that I see from the back sitting in a wheelchair. And my heart goes out to her. I can't see her from the back. She looks like she's 13 years old. And it was a freezing night in this area. And so I went over to her, even in the middle of the aisle. And I said, I just want to thank you for coming tonight, because I'm sure it was just so difficult for you to get here tonight. And then she turns around to look at me. And my heart fell. Because she had a terrible, terrible case of cerebral palsy. And her hands started moving, and her head, she had no head control and no hand control. And she starts talking, and I can't understand that she's in such a high-pitched voice. And her sister is sitting next to her, and she's trying to translate to me. And she says, my sister is so happy you came over to her. She's just so excited. And this, I can't imitate her. It just broke my heart, Mommy. The way she was trying to get out the words, and she was so excited that I acknowledged her. And I went and I sat down in the front seat in the front row. And 2 minutes later, somebody gave me an envelope, a letter from her. She had her sister write out a letter on a computer, and she didn't even think she would have the nerve to give it to me. But now that I went over and acknowledged her, so she gave me the letter. I want to share part of the letter with you. She writes, Dear Rabbi Krohn, let me introduce myself. My name is Rivka Bela. I'm not going to say her last name. I'm 20 years old. Believe me, she didn't look over 14. Unfortunately, I'm confined to a wheelchair. Until just about a year ago, everyone but my close family thought I was a dummy. Finally, after 19 years of misery, a psychologist named Dr. Sheehan let it be known that I'm an intelligent young lady. And she writes like this. I'm deeply grateful to you, Rabbi Krohn, for providing me with tapes and books. My favorite story is about Chumi Boldek's son and the bus driver with the handicapped mind. Perhaps you can further strengthen this most important point with my enclosed letter. People in wheelchairs are still people and should be treated that way. I listen to what she writes. Those of us who cannot speak know so much more because we spend our time listening. Could you imagine? Those of us who cannot speak know so much more because we spend our time listening. She says, if you have nothing nice to say, go elsewhere, don't stare. And then she gives me a letter that she wrote to the 11th grade Beit Yaakov school in that neighborhood. She writes, my name is Rivka Bela. Most of you smile at me when you see me. Some of you ignore me and stare when you think I don't see you. Don't think I don't see you staring at me like I'm nuts. Hashem didn't give me the ability to do all the things you can. But is that a valid reason for you to stare? Why don't you thank Hashem for being able to do all the things you do instead of pitying me? I saw you perform in the play, how I would love to sing and dance like you. I'm not trying to complain. I just want you to understand me. That's a girl that's crying out because she has less. There are people, as Rabbi Lera, a friend, a psychologist of mine, said, that are in emotional wheelchairs. They're in emotional wheelchairs because they don't have a job. They're in emotional wheelchairs because they've tried everything they can and they can't be successful in Parnassa. And we shouldn't stare at them. Just like Rivka Bela wants to be treated like a mensch, because as she writes later, she's part of a Tzelem Elokim. We have to know that people that are in emotional wheelchairs, that they can't get out of the rut and they've tried everything. We also have to have rachmanis on them. Not look down on them. But just like we would have rachmanis if we saw Rivka Belo, Yitzchak Bodet. We have to have rachmanis on people that have less than us. Not look down, but help to build them and help them make them feel important. The Gemara tells us, you know how you can do it? Something that'll be a bracha for you anyway. And my mother, Zolzangerson, always says this. Ain't a bracha, this time is chesam and say, ain't a bracha mitzuya ela b'dova hatzomam in the ayin. Things happen with bracha only if nobody knows about it. Don't tell anybody where you're going on vacation. Don't tell anybody what you can afford. Don't build in front of your house. Why does the whole world have to know what you're building? Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky once told me a story. I don't know if it's true, maybe he just made it up, but it's a nice story anyway. He said he was walking once in Bnei Brak and a guy was building a house. So he goes over to the guy, he says, excuse me, you see this window that you're building? I think it should be over a little bit, 2 feet to the right. And he says, you see this balance on the door? I don't like that style. I think you should get another style. The guy says, what are you, crazy? What are you telling me what to do? He says, why are you building this? For you? You're not going to see it. I'm going to see it because I'm walking by this street every day. So why don't you do it the way I want it? There's a great lesson in that. There's a great lesson. Nobody has to know what we're doing. The prophet tells us in Dvarim Beis Gimel, Rav Lachem Tzoyve Tzohar Azeh. David tells Moshe Rabbeinu, tell the people it's enough already at this mountain. Pidu Lachem Tzofayna, go up north. And the Klei Yoker says a great insight. Pidu Lachem Tzofayna, Tzofayna means hidden. Hidden, be hidden. Nobody has to know what you're doing. And the Klei Yoker cries out to the people in his time. He says, why is it that every single time we have our plocha, if we make $100, why do we have to show everybody that we have $1,000? He said, Goyim hate us for that. Goyim are jealous because they feel Adayim Azeh that Yankov stole the bracha from Esau. And I say, forget about the Goyim. Why do you have to tell other people what you could afford? It's only kinna and sinna. Can you explain to me why a woman has to walk out to get bread with a necklace with a toggle? Why is that important? Tonight is special. You can wear the toggle. But I'm talking when you're going out to buy bread and milk. Why, if a girl is going to seminary, or if she's going to Turo, does she have to wear a $300 three-piece suit? Why? What is your point of that? Is it the night of her vort? It's only going to cause kina. It's only going to cause sinna. And then eventually, Chas V'Shalom, they lose it. Don't flaunt it. Don't talk about your wealth. First of all, it's painful to other people. But besides, it's only hurtful to yourself. What do you need to iron horror? Why do we have to make a vort and a tznoyim and a lachayim? Why? What's wrong with one thing? Baruch Hashem, I've married off 3 children, I've 2 to go, and I hope to do the same thing with those 2. One thing! And I do it in the house! Why do you have to make it a big hall? My house is not much bigger than your house is. It's in and out. And I'll tell you something, I was just as happy as anybody else. Why do we make such invitation lists? Half the people don't want to be invited. They don't want to waste the time. They don't want to give the gift. And you don't want to go. So why are we inviting everybody that we think has to be invited? It's ridiculous. We should cut down the wedding list. Only if it's a real close friend. You're wasting their time and you don't want your time to be wasted. Why don't we wake up and do what we really want to do? I got an invitation just this afternoon. I said to my wife, why in the world are these people inviting me? What shaykhs do I have? It's my mechutin's cousin's cousin. So because he was at a chasana, because my mechutin invited him, that's why he has to invite me. It's ridiculous. So I told him, I didn't tell him I'm speaking that night. I didn't want to lie. I just said that I'm not available. I'm not available because I don't want to be available. Because it's not a point to go to every single wedding and make people spend so much money. There's no point to it. And another thing. We have to be so careful. There are many, many people that are blessed with money. But we live very close. We don't live in vacuums. And there are people almost next door neighbors. I can tell you in my shul, I was shocked. I had no idea. Here I think I know the people in my shul. And I found out about 2 fellows, and I think there's even more. Mamish, no job. No bread to put on the table. And they daven with you on Shabbos, and they say good Shabbos.
And you have no idea. Most people aren't going to tell you how bad things are. You have to be very sensitive. So what happens? The Torah tells us what happens. In Dvarim Ches Yud Beis Yud Gimel, Pen Toichal, you're going to eat. V'savata, you're going to be satiated. Ubatim Toivim Tivna, you're going to build big, beautiful houses. And it occurred to me, if you look in this pasuk, Dvarim Ches Yud Beis, the word Toivim is missing a vav. And I was thinking, why is it missing a vav? You know why? Because these houses are not really good. You think they're good, but there's something missing. Because when you build such a big house in an area where not everybody can have such a big house, that's not good, that's bad. It's bad for yourself and it's bad for the community. Because everybody thinks they have to live up to your standards. And then what happens? People try to live up to those standards and they can't anymore. And it's very, very difficult. So what happens? Then the Torah tells us, in Dvarim Ches Yud Zayin, a person, V'amarta b'levavecha, then you're going to say, you got so much money, koichi ve'oitem yodi, it's my koyach and it's my strength. And as Rav Nosson Sherman writes, and only he can write it that way, he writes, full stomach can cause empty head. And so therefore what we have to know is that which we say every day and by Varach David, and there's such a beautiful minigan Klal Yisrael, V'oitem v'hakovet l'fanecha, the oisher and kovet mifonecha is really only because of you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'ata moishel v'koil, and you rule over everything, uv'yotcha koyach u'gvura, uv'yotcha l'gadel u'lachazek v'koil, and that's why many people have a beautiful minig, that when they say this part of Baruch David, they give money for tzedakah, or they put aside a coin, to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that really I am only a pocket, I am only holding the money as a bank teller, I am only holding it as a pikodain, and I am only your conduit, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to give it out to other people. But my friend once told a terrific story. He told a story that happened to Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldsmith. Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldsmith was one of the Rosh Yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael when he was a little boy growing up in Eretz Yisrael when it was still Palestine. So he went into this place and he once said, Takan Adrosha, he said, every person has to work hard, b'zeyat apecha. And then Teich HaLechem. But the Zeyat HaPecho is one thing and the Teich HaLechem is something else. One has nothing to do with the other. Many times the Hatzlacha is going to come, the Teich HaLechem is going to come from a different place, not necessarily from the Zeyat HaPecho. And he told a story about a little girl who went into a store. A cowboy had a million things in this store. This was before 48, before Eretz Yisrael was called Israel, was called Palestine. And this little girl asked for Masberet. And the storekeeper, he looks around, he's turning over the whole store till he finds that little Masberet. Takes him 5 minutes. Finally, he finds it and he gives it to her. He makes 10 cents on it. 2 minutes later, a British soldier comes in and he wants a Parker pen. Parker pen was very hushed in those days. Now, this grocer, where in the world was he going to find that Parker pen? But 5 minutes ago, when he was looking for that Masberet, he just happened to see a Parker pen. So in 1 second, he takes the Parker pen, he gives it to the guy, charges him $3 and makes a fortune. So Rav Goldberg said, the Zeyat HaPecha was a Machberet. The Teich HaLechem was a Parker pen. And that's what we have to remember. Many times, we have to work and sweat. But that's not where the Hatzlach is going to come from. But you got to do yours. I'm going to tell you now a story that I'm embarrassed to tell you. But I make mistakes just like everybody else. And I do foolish things just like everybody else. And I regret that I did this thing. But I still feel that I want to share it with you. Because it just shows that when you're frustrated, and when you're angry, and when you're down and out, sometimes you do foolish things. But you've got to do things. You just got to make sure they're smart things. When I first became a mohel, I was 21 years old. My father was home, had passed away. I was supporting my mother and 6 other brothers and sisters. It was very, very difficult. I can tell you, most of the time when I walked into a house, and I walked in to do the bris, they would say, my gosh, you're so young. I would say, well, the baby's also young. And I'll tell you another thing, this just happened on Sunday. A guy, I did a bris on Sunday, so the fellow said to me, you don't recognize me, do you? I said, no. He says, you did my bris 25 years ago. I'm supposed to recognize him, right? So I said to the guy, so he said, listen to what he says to me. He says to everybody before the bris, he says, I want you to know that this rabbi was my moyo. And he wrote a book on circumcision, and I just read it. And I want you to know, when I read the book, I realized how young he was. When he did my bris, my parents were crazy that they used him. That's what he said in front of his father. Could you imagine? So here I'm 21, 22, and I'm trying, how does the Moyle build up a practice? You got to get people to refer you, right? So I went to the rabbis, I went to the doctors or whatever, and I tried to tell them, listen, I'm Rachmanis, you know, and any time that I did a bris and people were satisfied, I got a letter, and you know, and I would show it to these different people. So one day I come to a hospital in Long Island, Hempstead General Hospital. They don't have maternity today anymore. But anyway, but I come in there, and I thought I was going to meet a mother who had a baby, and I was going to do the bris. And when I meet the mother, she tells me, well, I just called another mile. So I said, well, how did that happen? I thought that, you know, I was talking to you on the telephone. I thought that, you know, I was going to come here, and we were going to make final arrangements for the bris. She said, well, I just spoke to a rabbi. He was in Belmore, Long Island, and he referred another mile. So I walked out of that room. I was livid. Because I had just visited that rabbi 2 days ago. And I had asked him to refer me. And obviously, you see how he listened, right? You know, he gave it to, you know, whoever he wanted to, not to me. So I did a ridiculous thing. I went down to the lobby, and I called him up. I should never have done this. But I called him up, and I said, you rabbis, you're all the same. You got your old cronies. My name is Cronin. I'm telling him about his cronies, right? So I said, you got your old cronies. You all recommend your own people. Of course, he never in his life referred me. And he passed away. I never even asked him for mechila, but okay. But the idea is that sometimes... So what happened? I would go back and I would tell my Zayda, you know, these type of stories. And my Zayda was also a Moyo, you know, when he was a young man. So he told me something that every person should remember. He said, in Megillas Esther, we call out, Dalad Yudalad, Rebach Vatzola Yamad LaYehudim Imokem Acher. Rebach Vatzola, the Parnota and the Hatzola and the Savings will come Imokem Acher. You have to do your Ishtadla. Each and every one of us has to make Ishtadla. The Zeyat Apecha, the sweat of your brow, we're cursed with that. Until Mashiach comes, we're cursed with that. And then, the Tzorich HaLechem, that will eventually come. And I'll tell you one more Mashiach. The Mashiach said something frightening. I would never say this unless I read it straight from the Mashiach. Kedushin Tebeis Amid Aleph. The Vadai Goli Umnis Klau La Yismach Adam Al Tfilosai. Without work, you can't rely only on tefillah. You got to get out there and get a job. If somebody's unemployed, he's got to walk the street. He shouldn't stay home. He's got to go out and get a job. Man, woman, or child, whoever has to bring in the money. Because tefillah alone is not enough. Lo yismach adam al tefillah lehitasher shechayet kol adam la'amay b'noy umnes. A person has to teach his son a job. A person, if he doesn't have a job, he should feel good about himself. Rav Sholosh Fadron always says, there's a Yiddish expression, Wieviel is er wert? How much is a person worth? What it really means is, how much money does he have? But that's a terrible expression. Sometimes you ask, what are you? He says, I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor, I'm a lumber salesman, I'm a taxi driver. That's not what you are! You're a Yid, you're an Elohim person, you're a father, you're a Machanach, you're a mother, you're a Chamechet. That's what you are. That's how you make some money. You're a lawyer. You're a doctor. You think that's going to be forever? These jobs change every day. I know somebody who drove a bus for a yeshiva, and then eventually he ended up being a purchasing manager for a $1 million company. So he's a bus driver. So he's a purchaser. He's an Elohim Yid who learns Afyomi every day. He's an Elohim Yid who's raising his children. That's how you have to look at it. And that's what I want to come to the most difficult part of this whole drasha. The most difficult part of this drasha is to quote this chazal. Bov Mitzia Nun Tes Amar Aleph. La'oilam Yehei Adir Zayim B'Tfuah B'Tzech Beisai. A person has to be careful that there should always be food in the house. She'ein Meriva Mitzia B'Tzech Beisai Shalodim El Aliske Tfuah. Many, many homes are broken. Many marriages have problems when people are out of work. And that's painful. That's painful. Because the husband wants to feel like the breadwinner. And many times if he can't find work and the wife is a breadwinner, the husband comes home and he'll say to the wife, why didn't you pay this bill? We got back this bill, why didn't you pay this bill on time? She says, what do you mean? You're the one who's supposed to bring in the money. I'm bringing in the money. And then it starts, one thing after the other, and that's very painful. How do we get out of that? How do we avoid that? And I asked Rav Meir Wicklow, many of you know him, he's a marriage counselor and a psychologist here in the neighborhood, a very big pikeach. And I said, how do you get out of this? And he says, I want to tell you a story. He said, there was a fellow who was never out of work. And he was looking and he was going from one job interview to the next. And finally he had a job, but he wanted a better job. And he's sitting the opposite of the boss. And the boss is sitting in front of a big desk.
And as this guy is answering the question, he looks down at his own shoes, and he sees that his shoes are not polished. And he thinks to himself, Ribbono Shel Olam, there's no way that this guy is going to hire me with these kind of shoes. I look terrible. He'll never hire me like this in this fancy company. And all of a sudden, he thinks to himself, and he says in his own mind, he doesn't say it out loud, but he screams in his own mind, I am not my shoes. I'm not my shoes because my shoes aren't polished. That's why I'm not going to get the job. I'm a person. I'm a living human being. I'm an important person. I'm not my shoes. And if my button isn't buttoned and my tie is not straight, that's the end of it. It's ridiculous. And if I can't afford the fanciest car. I'm my clothes. That's not what you are. You're a heiliger person. You're a yid. You're a father. You're a ben traitor. You're an erlich yid. That's how you have to look at yourself. And therefore, when he had that in his mind, all of a sudden he felt positive about himself. And he got the job. And that's what a wife has to look at a husband. A husband is more than a breadwinner. A husband is a companion. A husband is a father. He's teaching children. He's setting ideals for the home. And a husband has to look at a wife as more than just a plain cook. Want a cook, you can go to a restaurant. She's more than that. She's a companion. She's a mother to your kids. She sets the standards of Erlichkeit and Frumkeit in the house. We have to begin looking at the whole total picture of each other. And then if we look at the total picture, then we begin to feel good about each other and to give chizuk for each other. And that's the only way that we can survive these difficult times. Nobody can exist alone. We have to know that these are not easy times and forget about what everybody else has. We have to do our zeyat apecha, and then eventually we'll be zeicha to have the teicha lechem. So let's go over everything quickly, and we'll end with a fabulous story. Let's remember that Avraham Avinu wanted that Eliezer should be a Moishel b'chol asher loy. That's why he chose him, because he ruled over his possessions. Let's remember that people die and they don't even fulfill half of their taiva of money. And as the Gra tells us, it's like drinking water of salt. You think that you're satiated, but there's never an end. We have to know how to control that tremendous taiva of money. But on the other hand, we have to know that kesef yana zakol. We've got to have money, because if you don't go out and if you're lazy, then the house will leak, the doors will break, and tuition won't be paid, and how in the world are you going to marry off your kids, and how are you going to have food and clothes? We cannot shirk our responsibility. We have to remember, as Rav Yankov said, parnosa siyata d'shmaya. And so therefore we have to know that we daven every day in Baruch Aleinu to undo that curse. We have to know that it's really a battle. And don't look down on people that are not winning the battle. The battle is lechem, and teref, and mezoinis, and shever, and oichel, and mechiyah. The winners are those that are erla. Like that lady who said, the property may be for sale, but my religion is not for sale. And let's remember, that's why Rav Elie Dushnitz couldn't sell that, because he was erla, but eventually he was able to sell it. Let's remember that Eibishter doesn't always give us parnosa because once we should daven for him. And let's remember what that Meiri says. No matter what Hashem paskin or Rosh Hashanah, still we can do it with tefillah and tshuva. Let's remember in Baruch Aleinu, in Shema Kaleinu, in Birchas Hamazon, in Paseach HaShadecha, in Brochus, in Parshas Hamon, standing to the right or left, whatever you desire in life. Let's remember Meidecha. That's what Rapam tells us is the tremendous Nisayin Meidecha. Let's remember that if you're easy with your money, Vatran, you're going to live long. And then people will have to be your friends. But if you owe money, that has to be a priority to pay back the money, because otherwise the money is not yours. And let's remember that we don't keep it forever. Zuzin, it moves. Nechasim, it gets hidden. Momoin, what are we counting? Mala Ace, it's only temporary. Let's remember to daven, to their way, if we collect for others, that's how we'll be able to be zeicha to keep the money. Let's remember the Gemara Tainus tells us that's the only way you can test Hashem. You give Maaser, and Hashem Aser b'shul shetis Aser. Let's remember the Tzedakah that we give. Relatives come first. We can't stress that enough. That beautiful story with the Kapishin Tzereba. Let's remember to have the Nulachem Tzofoina. Let's remember that story of Rivka Bela. Let's remember those people that are in emotional wheelchairs. Let's be sensitive and let's not flaunt our wealth. Let's keep things hidden. If David has blessed us with good, let's keep it quiet and not brag about it. Chas v'shalom, besides the kinah, and besides the sinah, and besides the ayin hara, it only hurts other people. Let's remember that the Zeyat HaPech is something that we all have to do, and the Teicha Lechem will come eventually.
And let's remember something that I forgot to tell you, that Rav Gifter says, we don't make a living, we take a living. We don't make it. The Eibishter gives it to us, and we are taking a living from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that which the Marsha tells us, tefillah is not enough, you gotta go out there and get the job. And let's remember that Parnosa is something that can chas v'shalom lead to shalom bayis problems. You're not your shoes, you're not your clothes, and you're not your jalopy car. You're much more than that. And your husband should look at you as an important person, and you should look at the husband as an important person. And let's just end with this tremendous, tremendous story. Rav Uren Reich, the son-in-law of Rav Shneur Kotler, every once in a while he calls me with a beautiful story. And he recently called me to tell me a tremendous story, and I said to him, Rabbi Reich, I can't even begin to tell over the story unless I find out all the particulars and to find out that it's really true. And he said, I'll find out the name of the person to whom it happened. And he made calls and he found out that it happened to a fellow Lazer Marillis who was born in Switzerland, who today lives in Eretz Yisrael. And so a few months ago when I was in Eretz Yisrael, I called Lazer Marillis and I said, tell me, is this story about you and the Panovich Hirov, is it really true? And he said, yes, come to the Kollel Chazanish tomorrow, I'll tell you the story. And he tells me like this. He says, when he was 16 years old, he came to Panovich. He came to Panovich, and they told him, he came from Switzerland, that he can't be accepted. Because there are 1,000 people already, 1,000 bochum already in the yeshiva with Kollel Yungalite. And besides, he didn't have the background in Torah that boys would have either in America or in Eretz Yisrael. After all, he came from Switzerland, so he's not accepted. So he said, I would like to see the Rebbetzin, the Panovitzer Rebbetzin. So they said to him, the Panovitzer Rebbetzin, well, she's got nothing to do with enrollment or admissions. Just still, I want to see her. So they take him to the Panovitzer Rebbetzin, and he takes out a piece of paper from his pocket, and he shows it to the Rebbetzin. She reads the paper. She can't get over it. She says, quickly, come with me to the Rav. Takes him to the Panovitzer Yerov. The Panovitzer Yerov reads the letter. He smiles. He embraces the boy. He says, you're accepted in the yeshiva. And the administration on hold their open mouth. What is that? What's going on here? What does it say on that paper? And many, many times the Panovitzer Yerov would tell over the story, and that's how we know it. In the early 1950s, this little boy, came from a very, very wealthy family. And every summer and every winter they would go to a certain hotel in Switzerland. And they always had the best room in the hotel on the first floor. So in the early 1950s, the Panovitzer Rav never had serious surgery, and he came from Eretz Yisrael to Switzerland to recuperate. And he comes to this hotel. Now it was going to be Shabbos, and there's no way the Panovitzer Rav can walk the three flights up to the third floor, so they need somebody that's going to give up the room on the first floor. Who's going to give up the room on the first floor? So what happens is, that particular winter, Mrs. Marillis was there with her son only because the father had to be away on a business trip. So they figured that they are going to ask this lady, she should give up the room. So they go over to the lady and they said, listen, the Panovitzer Rav is here, he can't walk the stairs, do you mind, would you be able to give up the room? So she says, well, you can't only ask me, you got to ask the little cavalier here, the little gentleman. So they said, what do you mean, the little gentleman? This boy we got to ask? He says, yeah, because after all, he also has to give up the room. So they ask him, they say, excuse me, little boy, would you want to give up the room? So they have no tree. Yeah, the boy says, yeah, it's no problem. For the Panovitzer Rav, he'll give up the room. Fine. They go upstairs. 20 minutes later, after they have all their things, here comes the Rebbetzin. The Rebbetzin comes upstairs, and she says to Mrs. Marillis, a very wealthy lady, I would like to thank you very much that you gave us the room, because the Panovitzer Rav asked me to give you a kol hakavod, because after all, he can't walk upstairs. So she says, don't thank me, you got to thank the little cavalier. So the Rebbetzin looks at this little boy, says, well, thank you very much that you gave the room. She says, you know, if you come downstairs, I'd like to buy you a chocolate, a Swiss chocolate. So he says, no, I don't want a chocolate. So she says, you know, I'm going to town later this afternoon. I'll buy you a toy, any toy that you want. So she says, he says, no, I don't want a toy. Okay. She says, well, what can I give you? I'd like to give you something. 7 years old, this boy. He says, I just gave my bed to the Panovitzer Rav. I would like someday that when I come to the Panovitzer, the Rav should give me a bed in his yeshiva. So the Rebbetzin was soon as spoiled from this. She took out a piece of paper and she wrote down, if this boy ever comes to Panovitzer, he has a bed in the yeshiva. And she ran downstairs, and she had the Panovitzer Rav sign it.
and she gave it to the boy. But what I can't get over is that the mother took this letter from the little boy and she kept it in a safe for 10 years. 10 years she kept it in a safe, and then when he was 16 years old, she sent him to Punovich with that letter. That's why the boy got accepted. How does it happen that a 7-year-old boy understands what Torah is, what Punovich is, what Torah Meretz Yisrael is? You know why? Because even though they had a wealthy mother who could afford to go to a Switzerland hotel summer and winter, they had their priorities in order. They understood that it's Torah that's the most important and not money that's the most important. And that's the thing that we have to remember. We have come here tonight, Zareinu and Kasreinu. When the Eibishter told Avraham Avinu, he said, "Your Zareinu, your children should be kachoel, and they should be like stars." Let us hope that from tonight on, all of us, our children and our money, will taka be a shining example, like stars for the world over. We should accomplish what we're supposed to accomplish. I thank you for inviting me, and I thank you for listening.